Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I'm Mags, and today, because the event was on pretty early in the UK, I've got a stranger to the show. You might remember his voice way back when we recorded on the old networks, but he's back again. How are you, Carlos?
Brilliant. I'm good, how are you?
A massive cough, like clearing the throat there for the audio.
What I was taking a drink of milk because I've been here for ages and I got a bit all stuck.
Yeah, so before we get into the card, what's been going on with you? I mean, I've been telling the listeners about your life with uni and with work and getting back to training and your new fight gear. So how's your life been in the few weeks that the listeners haven't heard you?
Oh, it's been an absolute nightmare. It's been just all guns go. Working darts, which I'm thankfully not doing now. Don't ever get a job doing darts, it's horrible. You're tired all the time, can't do nothing. And like you're saying, getting back into the training, getting the new fire kit is one of the best things that's come out of this last, like, I'd say month or two. So yeah, I'm just glad to be back and actually having a little bit of a routine, being back doing the podcasting again.
Yeah, hopefully so. I mean, your new job sounds like it's going to be a little bit more lenient. I mean, you can't really guarantee that you'll be around for every single one because there's obviously shift patterns and stuff like that. But it's certainly what should work out better than your last job, hopefully. But anyway, let's get into this card. So we've just watched UFC Vegas 41, headlined by the blood feud between Paulo Costa and Marvin Vettori. We'll quickly just plow through these prelims, quite a few prelims. So we started with Jonathan Martinez getting the decision against Zviad Lazishvili. Then we got Randy Marcos picking up the decision, and I saw a post-fight interview where she said essentially this fight has probably saved her UFC career. I think she was on a four-fight losing streak, but she gets the decision against Livia Renata Souza. Then we get the first knockout of the night. Jeff Molina knocked out Daniel Lacerda in 46 seconds, and then that was quickly followed up by Jai Herbert knocking out Karma Werber in 2 minutes 47 seconds. Back to the decisions in the middleweights with Jamie Pickett beating Laureano Staropoli, and then Tabitha Richer getting the decision against Maria Oliveira. UK and Wales' own Mason Jones finally got his first UFC win with a decision over David Onana. Onana took the fight, I think, on about a week's notice or something like that.
He was unbeaten as well. Yeah. Good prospect.
And I thought he made a really good show himself, but Mason Jones really kept showing his class in that fight.
Yeah, he's definitely coming more out of his shell. A lot of people around the world might not know him, but he was the double champion cage warriors before coming over to the UFC. I think it was his first fight or his first two fights.
I think that's his second fight now.
His first fight were a little bit of a hit and miss. You could tell he just weren't all. Nervous. Like, you could tell he were a prospect, tell him a championship material, just weren't all there. And tonight, he's showing what he is actually capable of.
And then the last prelim was Gregory Rodriguez getting the second round knockout of Park Jun Young. That was a proper standing and banging fight. Two fighters who were top draw in terms of grappling and actual martial arts, just wailing on each other for two rounds. It was absolutely brilliant to watch. But we actually started the card in the light heavyweight division. Nicolai Nemugamerenu, I'm going to be calling him Nicolai, taking on RK Villanueva. And this was pretty damn quick. 1 minute 18 of the first round, and Nicolai gets the knockout. Both guys looking to start to essentially stand and bang, but Nicolai quickly is able to take control, pushes the fight to the cage. Villanueva gets away, gets back to the middle, but the shots were still being traded. And then just as they were both just lamping each other with big shots, Villanueva just drops to the canvas after a massive rout. Nicolai follows up with some hammer fists, and it's pretty much over. Mark Beltran jumps in, stops the fight. 1 minute 18, Carlos.
I feel like Chris Kavara at this moment in time. You know, when they said, there's been a sub. Has it? I'm making some food, and honestly, I didn't know this fight even happened. I was just looking at the schedule, and I thought the first fight at Bain Court with Francisco. I'm going to have to go back and watch that. Like, has it? Did he knock him out? Has it?
Yeah, it was a.
I don't know, Jeff.
It was a good way to start the card. Very exciting. But this is what happens though with UFC. Every now and again, they'll throw a six match main card, and it throws you because it's hard work to kind of go off the top of the head with five fights. Then they throw an extra one, and you think, Jesus Christ. But yeah, it was a very quick fight. Good win for Nicolai. I think he was 1-1 in his UFC career before this. And now obviously 2-1, but he's in his career he's 11-1, so he's hopefully he's going to climb that lightweight division pretty quickly and get a bigger fight, because it was clear that he outclassed Villanueva in this. Second fight then, or Carlos's first fight as he Carlos's card opener. Dwight Grant taking on Francisco Trinaldo in the welterweight division. Go on then, Carlos, lead us through this. Francisco picked up the split decision win, but it could have easily been the other way.
Yeah, definitely. It could have gone. This was one of the fights where it could have gone one of either ways. Now, this is one of the fights I'm definitely going to go back and rewatch, because for me personally, I think the way I was watching it, it could have gone more towards Duarte's way than it could have towards Francisco. Now, I'm not saying it's not an unfair decision. The reason the judges obviously give it to Francisco is the amount of pressure he was able to keep up, as well dealing with the adversity that he was given. But I also feel that Duarte was also giving off all that offensive and attacking a lot more. But obviously the judges see it differently. But each round was generally the same. It came to the clinch work. Duarte was, for me, that little bit more better. As being the longer fighter, it were a little bit more easy for him to switch up the positions, hold Francisco more towards the cage. But when you're built like Francisco, you're like a little tornado, so you're able to actually explode out of these positions. In a way, I want much faster than you would your longer opponents. But yeah, this is all in all, this were a great fight, a great scrap between. I couldn't say a young prospect, because Francisco seems like he's been around since I were about two.
24 fights in the UFC,
which is absolutely mental. You've got to give respect to the man right there. and it's not like he's fought nobody's either. He's fought some top tier talent as well. So for him to still be in the UFC, 20 odd fights down the line. Like we can take it back with some fighters who have come into the UFC, maybe had two or three fights and then either been cut or just been released just because they're not needed. You rarely get a fighter that can stick around in an organisation like the UFC for that amount of time. So he's not a fighter to sort of be, in a way, messed with. And not only that, Duarte can somewhat look at this, because even though he's got a record of 11-4 now, it's not a bad record to say he's only basically coming up in the UFC rankings, and losing against Francisco is not. I wouldn't say he's not a smack in the mouth, which he got, but more of a learning curve. You've just been in the octagon with a more experienced, the more elite fighter. And yeah, you didn't get the win, but you got the learning experience from that. So hopefully he can come back a better fighter and maybe switch it up. Maybe I was watching it wrong. Maybe he didn't throw the feints in enough to where Francisco couldn't see the shots coming, because he could see a lot of them coming. That's why he was able to deal with the adversity. Mm-hmm. But all in all, it's a fair decision from the judges, but it could have gone either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the pivotal point is not even the point getting deducted. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of balances out that third round, which I thought Francisco edged that third round. I think he was very dominant in the first round, landing some huge shots. But for me, the pivotal point was that second round. However, that was judged, kind of like dictated where the round went. And for me, I thought that Grant won that round. I thought his groundwork was a lot better. The attack was fresher from him. He can take a lot of kind of positives from it, that he's been able to hang in there with a veteran and only lost by a split decision. I mean, it only takes one judge to go the other way and you're looking at a draw or even a split decision your way. Francisco can breathe a sigh of relief that he pulled that out of the bag, especially getting that point deduction at the end. And it's not even the first point, the last point deduction we'll get on the show. It seems that this whole show was littered with them, which sounds bad, but I think it's
a good thing.
I think it's a good thing because the UFC especially is incredibly lenient on fouls.
If the UFC aren't willing to change the gloves of the fighters to make it safer, then yeah, I think it's right that we should be seeing more point deductions from referees when fighters actually pull it to the eyes. If you've got one warning as a professional, in my opinion, I say people can say I'm wrong, but my opinion is, if the referee told you once to close your hands and you then poke someone in the eye, I'd take a point off you straight away, because at the end of the day, it's fair enough, you might not be able to make a full fist sometimes because of the gloves, but that's not the referee's problem. That's not your opponent's problem. That's you as a fighter's problem. You getting in there, signing the contract, knowing the rules, knowing that's one of the things that is sometimes hard to do. No one wants to be making fists all the time for 25 or 15 minutes. It's, especially when something's going against you, it's not possible. So yeah, I think it's better that we're actually seeing more point deductions, because I think, to be honest with you, doing this after a couple of events and a couple of probably major fights of this happening, do you really think we're going to be seeing as many eye pokes? When fighters know, hang on a minute, I can't play this as dirty as we once could, because we're going to get a point to cough us. And then it's a dangerous game, because then you need to, in a way, you then need to start looking for a knockout or a submission. Because once you have a point to cough you or 2 points to cough you, your fight pretty much over in that sense, if it goes the full distance. You can pretty much wave it bye-bye to your opponent.
Yeah, and the point you made about having to finish the fight, we see that in the next fight, Alex Bruce Lee Roy Caceres taking on Seong Woo Choi. For this one ends in the second round, but first round, Seong Woo Choi was absolutely dominating Alex Caceres. There was a point where in about the middle of the first round, me and you were both watching, and Choi absolutely tagged Alex Caceres, and we were making the comparisons to Afro Ninja, for people who know that meme. Alex Caceres was absolutely stunned, and if he had a pair of nunchucks with him, he would have been swinging and doing the Afro Ninja meme. But the issue comes when Alex Caceres is wounded on the floor, gets swarmed by Choi. And then Choi, for whatever reason, I mean, it might be just in the heat of battle, but he throws a knee whilst Alex Caceres is clearly downed. Jason Herzog calls time, docks a point, which was fair, because that could have been a fight-ending moment there. Props to Alex Caceres for being able to fight on. He was getting dominated in that first round, but the point deduction meant that going into the second round, it was still all even Stevens. And that's where Alex Caceres was able to change up his game plan, avoid a lot more of the shots that Trey was able to throw. And then when Choi overextended on a kick, Alex Caceres was able to slip to the back, basically jumped on him, kind of backpacked him, got the neck. Choi falls forward and Alex Caceres was able to squeeze in the lock and come away with a massive, massive come from behind style victory. So, Carl, what were your thoughts on this fight?
This was a brilliant fight. I love Alex, and I love his persona of basically coming off as Bruce Lee. He lived up to his reputation as the champion that he was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. No, is he an exciting fighter? Yeah, definitely, of course he is. In this fight, yeah, he made a couple of mistakes. He also made some good efforts, but it was sort of a mix and match. But going onto the point, getting deducted, you can understand why the ref made that decision. With Choi already hurting him and giving him that flurry of punches, he could have finished him. But with him sort of getting, I'd say, overly too excited of going, oh, I'm going to get the finish here, and just the instinct of the fighter switching on, go, I can get a knee off here, and throws the knee. Maybe he thought Alex was on both feet. It's all up in the air when it comes to all that sort of stuff. But the referee took the point away just for the sole reason of Alex was already hurt. That knee, like you said, it could have been potentially a fight ender. Mm-hmm. So, and with it being early in the round as well, you can see also why the referee took the point away instead of it sort of being a fight ender. Because if it was a fight ender, no one would have won. It just would have been a doctor stoppage because it's too early into the fight to then go.
Contest.
Yeah, so then it just would have been like just an absolute waste in a way. But then going on to Alex's comeback from that, the way we were able to slip the kick and transition. Well, I wouldn't say transition because there were no transition involved. We were able to slip the kick and then take the triangle, the body triangle to Choi, and then it just simple. When you're fighting in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're doing a lot of hand fighting. Obviously, you're not punching in the face or all that. You're doing a lot of hand fighting. You're keeping the opponent away from your neck. You're keeping your arms up. But in this fight, Alex was able to mix that up a hell of a lot, but you don't really see. You see people, when they're in that sort of position in fights, try and just hand fight or try and get the choke. They somewhat forget that they're in a mixed martial arts bout and they can punch sometimes. And Alex were able to mix that up by punching to the side of the head, throwing in the uppercuts underneath when Choi's got his arms up to try and stop the arms coming in for the rear naked choke. And as soon as he saw the rear naked choke, bang, yeah, he were on it. Just like a snake would on its prey. He was just squeezing the life out of Choi. And Choi, he couldn't get out of that. As soon as a choke like that is in, and it's in right perfectly, there ain't no getting out of it. Mm-hmm. That's why you've seen Choi just collapse straight away to the floor, just to make it easier for him to get his hands, and it weren't because he were out. It was literally just for that case of if you've got someone in a choke like that, instead of going to your back and potentially then putting it on tighter, if you go forward, all their pressure's on you. So you can try and get some breath back, but that were all over as soon as Alex set that choke in. Alex basically turned that loss into an outstanding comeback win.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about elite level fighters being able to kind of sink in those submissions and like a snake. I actually was dual watching this pay-per-view with Bellator 269 and Usman Nurmagomedov, part of that Khabib dynasty. He did pretty much exactly the same thing against Patrick Piatella. He saw the sniff of the back, was able to take it and got a rear neck choke. So yeah, you do not give your opponents the opportunity to get that back, because if they're at any kind of level of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're going to sleep. Simple as that.
Definitely.
So then going into my fourth fight, but Carlos's third, Jessica Rose Clark taking on Jocelyn Edwards in the women's bantamweight division. And for me, this fight is really easy to analyse and critique. This was a typical clash of styles between somebody who wants to stand and bang and somebody who wants to grapple. Grapple is a loose term because it was more wrestle fucking. Yeah, wrestle fucking. Jessica Rose Clark obviously wanted to really kind of make a statement in this division. Unfortunately, the statement is, I'm a boring fighter, because she did not want to stand and bang at all with Jocelyn Edwards.
Well, it's not even the fact that she didn't even want to stand and bang. The fact is that she's been out for 2 years, you came back, and I understand you want to get the win, you want to get that confidence back, but she was in control most of the fight.
11 minutes of of ground control.
And she was in plenty of position, and most, I guarantee if we were to look it up now, most of that time she was spent in mount, and she didn't deliver any sort of damage. There was nothing. I would literally get into the point where I was looking at that fart and thinking to myself, UFC needs to do something about that fart there. Just because of the antics that were going on with Thingy's fucking thing falling out. And that's the point I got to in that fart.
Yeah.
Rather than just going, well, this is shit, she's just lying on her, she's got control, she's doing nothing, I was thinking the UFC needs to change that fart there.
Yeah. You lose concentration. Because it was... every time that Jessica Rose Clark was in control, she just led on her opponent. That's bad on Jocelyn Edwards not being able to kind of like get a way out, but it took a point when Keith Peterson is telling you to stand up, and as soon as you're standing up, Jessica Rose Clark is going back down for the takedown. It was a clinic in taking down and holding your opponent down, but in terms of beating your opponent and action, this was a boring fight.
It was a good wrestling match for pins, yeah. But it's a mixed martial arts match. And a lot of people, I see a lot of casuals like arguing about this when people say, oh, it's boring because they do it. It's like, oh, well, no, they grapple. When people say stuff like that, it's boring. A lot of people just totally forget the whole point of MMA, mixed martial arts. It's all mixed together. So if you're just going in there and trying to dominate in one thing, yeah, of course it's going to be boring. People watch mixed martial arts to see the mixed part of the martial arts, not to tune in to watch a wrestling match. Mm-hmm. They can watch the Olympics for that. They can watch fucking telly on a Sunday.
I mean, it'd be all right if it was a proper wrestling match, but this wasn't. There was not really a lot of movement from Clark to score submissions. Mm-hmm. This was just a case of lying on your opponent to dominate, to negate them attacking you. It won her the fight. Yeah, it was boring as fuck. But she goes up against someone of a higher caliber who can get up from them positions, or who can stuff her takedown in the first place. She's going to get found out very, very quickly.
And not even that, even if she can hold people down, it's going to be boring, because it's not like, there's a reason a lot of people like love Khabib. For the fact that he can hold people down, it's the fact that he can smack people in the face at the same time.
Khabib is always looking for a sub. That's the issue.
Yeah, either to dominate or sub. He's not just looking to go, right, I've got a dominant position here, I'm just going to hold it and lie in, you know, and then just wait till that bell goes.
For me, it felt that Jessica wasn't in. Not that she wasn't interested. If a submission showed itself, she would have taken it. But she didn't go out to make a submission. She went out to just defend.
If she weren't in full guard for most of the time, she were in mount. And she weren't in mount, she were in full guard. Mm-hmm. It's only the seconds that she was in the other position before she transitioned to it. And the fact is that she could transition to full guard to mount so easily and not even find a submission, just straight wrestling and holding her down, just makes it boring.
Absolutely. So let's go into the co-main event. Grant Dawson and Ricky Glenn. Ricky Glenn was the biggest outsider on the whole of the card. Carlos has got some thoughts on this fight. Let's hear them.
This was a decent fight. Mm-hmm. To say that these two fighters, was the co-main event, they weren't a disappointment.
No.
This was absolutely a masterclass for pressure, really. We could see Dawson apply just endless amounts of pressure in the first two rounds. That was just so, in a way, perfect. When we talked about the last fight and we went that she was absolutely dominant in wrestling, he was dominant in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and wrestling. He was looking for the submission. He was looking to get that offense off. He was looking for the takedowns. Granted, he was holding Rick up against the cage for a fair lot of the time, but they were still looking for stuff. They were still looking for the takedown. They were still throwing the shots in there. He literally made it exciting. But Rick, even though he was the biggest sort of underdog on the card, I don't think a lot of people know his name or sort of know his background. He's another veteran who were on this card who knows exactly what to do, and he was just so calm when it got to the ground, because he was in like I say, for the first two rounds, he was in positions to where any other ordinary fighter could have like killed under the pressure there. Could have just gone, nah, fuck this, he's enough for... If you see how much pressure this kid's putting on me, if he's not going for me leg, he's punching me in gut. If he's not got his arm around me gut, he's trying to elbow me in head. If he's not doing that, he's trying to knee me. If he's not doing that, he's putting me on the floor, knee me in ribs. He could have given up at any point there, going, well, this kid's clearly younger, he's got more agile, he's more flexible, he's faster, but he didn't have the IQ as what Rick did. Rick was able to just stay calm, weather the storm, keep his arms up to where he couldn't get rear naked choked, or keep his arms out, flailing to where he could give a submission up. He did exactly what he needed to do to take it towards the end, but in doing that, in the last round, his corner already told him, you need a finish in this round. If you don't get a finish, this fight's lost. You've lost it. So when he comes out, he comes out a bit more active on the gas pedal first. And that puts him in a position there where he's leading the fight then. And Dawson starts to get tired at this point because he's been absolutely dominant in grappling for the first 10 minutes. And it's not the first time that Dawson's been able to do that. But when you're doing that against a high level person like Rick, he's gonna make you use a lot of energy because you're gonna use a lot of energy trying to do stuff to him that he's gonna be able to counter react because he knows exactly what to do. So you're gonna use that energy no matter what you do. So Dawson was absolutely gassed in that third round. Absolutely gassed.
And that was the difference maker, especially to the judges. I think two judges gave that final round a 10-8. The other judge, I think it was Sal D'Amato, gave it a 10-9, which ended up being the majority draw because Dawson got 1-29-28 and then it was 2-28-28. So it all went on how you judge that final round. I do think that you're right, that Dawson was so dominant in those first two rounds, but he emptied the gas tank.
That's it, and that's where the controversy comes from to me, because in them sort of, because he didn't do a lot of damage, he didn't do a lot of stuff in there. Only thing that he did was somewhat control the position, but when you're looking at it from different points of views, who's controlling the position when they're up against the fence? Is it the person trying to get the takedown, or is it the person defending the takedown? Because if you're defending the takedown a longer time than the person is actually getting the takedown, are you winning or you're losing at that point? Because you're not on your back, and the person who's trying to get the takedown at that point is failing. And to me, that's what Dawson started to do a lot more in the second round, when he started to slow down a little bit, because his first round was absolutely massive wrestling heavy. He started to slow down, then in the third round, they were gone, they were gassed. That's why Rick was able to take that round completely. And then when it got to the sub part, and I'm guessing that's going to be talked about for about a week, because next week's card's on. But yeah, I'm guessing that's going to be talked about for a couple of days anyway, about the controversy. Was he out? Was he not out? Should he have won the fight? Should he have lost the fight? We'll never know up until these two fight again. But that's what, actually speaking about it now, that's what won, obviously, Rick the fight, with him basically being able to somewhat, in the second round, overturn it, then in the third, absolutely, in a way, dominate the fight. I can see why the judges have somewhat give that a draw.
Yeah, I mean, it did make sense, but that last 10 seconds or so is always going to be controversial, especially when that choke was very, very, very tight. Dawson was giving the thumbs up, and as the klaxon went and Ricky Glenn let the choke go, it took Grant Dawson a hell of a long time to get to his feet. Now, that invokes a very underused rule about being able to make it to your feet after the bell goes. Right. And Ricky has an argument that should have been called. But watching the replays, you can see that it wasn't, because it didn't seem to me like it was because he was knocked out. It just seemed to me like he was just worn out, exhausted. I don't think Grant Dawson was knocked out. I think he just had no energy left because he'd emptied that gas tank and because he'd been essentially destroyed in that third round.
And that's and if the viewers who watched the event actually listened, if they was listening along whilst Paul Felder and Michael Bisping were actually talking, when they both said to me, I actually agreed with both of them, with Paul Felder actually saying what you were saying, Is he out or is he not out? Maybe he's just fatigued and he's just utterly drained just because he's been in a grueling fight. And then Biff's been saying straight after that, yeah, but his body language doesn't look convincing. So you can see where, you can see what they're going to be looking at. And you can agree, like, yeah, was he out, was he not out? We'll never truly know. Was he fatigued? Definitely. Was he fucked? Definitely. Anyone would have been after that fight. But as Michael Bisping said, what the judges would have been looking at after the fight is body language. Ripper walking about after the fight. Dawson was struggling to get to his knee before falling back onto his back.
Yeah, it's definitely a fight that needs to run back.
Yeah, definitely. Especially after a fight the way it ended has definitely got to make sure it has definitely got to run that back.
Yeah, absolutely. So, main event time, Paulo Costa versus Marvin Vettori was meant to be at middleweight, then was meant to be at catchweight, then was at lightweight. Before we actually get into the fight, I just want to give my view and then let Carlos give his view on this whole situation with Paulo Costa. So, in case you were living under a rock or you don't know, essentially about a week before weighing, Paulo Costa made it known that he wasn't going to make it to 185. This is someone who's struggled with weight cutting pretty much all the way through his UFC career. Then when it come to fight, before that, he kind of put the pressure on Marvin Vettori on Twitter, saying essentially saying it was up to him to accept the fight at a catchweight, which Marvin Vettori absolutely accepted it with no problem. But to kind of be the one missing weight and then putting all the onus on your fighter your opponent to accept the fight, for me, is massively, massively unprofessional. To not even give a reason why you're missing weight and to say that you'll reveal the details after the fight, massively, massively unprofessional. Then on weighing that, he made it known he wouldn't be able to make 195, which meant the fight was then bumped up to 205, which he did make weight. Marvin also made weight at that. But this whole situation has left an ugly black mark on MMA, especially on the weight cutting system for me. I think I'm in the same corner as Bisping was, that he had no intention of making 185 because he came out looking like
a specimen.
He was all muscle. There wasn't he had a bit of a jowl on the chin.
I mean, he didn't look tired, he didn't look deflated, he didn't look fuck all, he didn't look like a fighter who for the last week has been trying to make weight.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've been there.
I don't think he had any intention of making weight. I think he tried to game the system of just dropping that 20%, yeah, knowing that he could have a very easy kind of last week into running into fight camp, which for me makes a mockery of the whole system.
He's on a contract where he can do that sort of stuff, like we were on about earlier. He's one of them named fighters who's got a decent contract where he could just go, I don't really need that 20 grand, that 20%, so I'm just going to give it up. And yeah, I've been there so many times with other fighters and watching them in person cutting weight and then myself doing it. He didn't make it. Like you said perfectly before Marvin Vettori said it, he's a cunt.
Yeah.
He's just a cunt. Simple as that. He is. And he did not try and make weight. But he knew exactly what he was doing. He thought, if I don't make weight, I can fight Marvin Vettori. He's already a heavy hitter. I can be stronger, bigger, and I'll be the stronger heavy hitter, and I'll knock him out before he does it to me.
The 20 pounds was muscle. It's as simple and clear as that. There was no extra water weight. There was no fat on him. It was all muscle.
It's literally a muscle. That's all he's been doing. He's been lifting weights, hoping to just get one clean smash. That's why every single punch he threw was just nothing but power to Vettori. Because he knew that's the reason he came in that ever and that overweight. Because he knew that he had to get as much power as he could to knock that absolute Italian fucking zombie out. Because you can't knock him out.
And the issue is he used his name and his stroke in the UFC to game that system, because he knew that this fight was always going to happen. He knew that Marvin was never going to back out of the fight, so he could get away with murder. Luckily, and we'll get into the fight now, he got his comeuppance because whilst he should have dominated this fight, being the heavier fighter, he lit a fire under Marvin Vettori. And we've never been the biggest Marvin Vettori fans here on Fight Grounds.
I'm the fucking biggest fan of Marvin Vettori tonight in the world.
Yeah, I was definitely in his corner. A lot of Brazilian fighters who normally back their own guys were definitely in Marvin Vettori's corner. Even Anthony Rumble Johnson came out on Twitter and said, for all the problems he's ever had with missing weight, and he had quite a lot of problems.
Yeah, this is the guy who went from welterweight to heavyweight.
Yeah, he said every time he missed weight, he had no excuse. He was disappointed in himself. He didn't try and game the system for how Paulo Costa has acted. Yeah, he should be ashamed of himself. Dan Hardy has come out and said that Paulo Costa should give up all of his winnings and also pay Marvin Vettori 100% of his winnings. So yeah, the one good thing is this has kind of united the MMA world about gaming the system, and I hope that this leads to talk of changing the weighing system. Because right now it doesn't work. It really doesn't work. It's built to get an advantage over an opponent rather than natural, healthy weighing for fighters. So I still believe that daily weighings throughout the final week of your training camp should be the norm. So you have to maintain your fighting weight over a longer period. Because cutting water weight and then banging it straight back on 10 minutes later is not only unhealthy and bad for your body, but it's cheating because you're not that way.
Well, there's a reason they brought in the 16% in the first place. And if you don't know what I'm on about by saying that is, when a fighter cuts weight down to whatever weight they're trying to make, when they hit the target, they're only allowed to hydrate 16% of their body weight back on before the fight. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a reason they put that in place, is because people was trying to get down to fucking lightweight or featherweight, and they should have been a fucking middleweight or a welterweight. And it's like, you're trying to get either a reach advantage, a strength advantage, or whatever on your opponent just because you're the much bigger guy. Now, if you were to fight in your normal weight category, Gary Dante, a lot of the rosters and a lot of the ladders and a lot of the top tens will be totally different, because you haven't got guys like... Now, Khabib, one of the best in the world, and like I said to you the example earlier, there's a reason he cut weight down to 170. It's not because he's amazing there. We all know he's an amazing fighter. 155. He's an amazing fighter, but at 155, he cuts down all the way to that. It's because what? He's at 6'1". He's got a lengthy reach span when it comes to that weight. He's strong when it comes to that weight, especially when you're a high-level grappler. It's going to be a lot easier to hold a smaller guy down.
And then if he's at welterweight, fighting at 170, he's got fighters... got fighters who are coming down from middleweight, who are dropping from 185. And
exactly, like
6'4", 6'5".
Kamaru Usman.
Yeah.
All them fighters, even your Jorge Masvidal, your Darren Tills, mm-hmm. who are fighting at that weight. Do you think Khabib is doing this to exactly them? And before people say, well, yeah, it don't matter how big they are, just go and look at DC and his training videos. Did he look like the same sort of amazing grappler that he's done in 155 when he's grappling DC? Or did DC show him that, yeah, when you know exactly what you're doing and when you can grapple, maybe when you are heavier and bigger than your opponent, it's not like the worst thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. it just goes to show everyone needs to fight in their own weight category. Not only will it be better for the fighters, it's also going to be healthier for them. The less likely to fucking die at the end of the day. It's already a dangerous sport when you're taking kicks to the head and punches to the head. Maybe just change that one bit just to make it a bit more safer.
Well, yeah, especially when you're kicking the shit out of your kidneys. Because
exactly.
You're cutting water. But anyway, let's get into the fight. This fight went all five rounds, and it was actually a really fun fight. A lot of kind of bad blood here, obviously, because of what happened with the weight cutting and Costa's attitude. No touching of gloves. In fact, Costa, when he entered the octagon, went to kind of to step up to Vettori, was actually pulled away by the security team. and Costa was landing some. His big weapon was that head kick.
I'd said the head kick. Would you not say the body kick?
No. In the beginning of the first four rounds or so, it was always the head kick. The body kick only really came in that final round, really, to be fair. But the head kick was the one that was landing, especially, I think it was in the second, when Vittori just took it on the neck and the chin and just walked through him, and you called it perfectly when you called him a zombie. Costa was landing some huge shots, but that extra weight meant that he was...
He was fucked by the end of the first round.
End of the first round, he was absolutely knackered. Yeah. Vittori did a lot better in kind of avoiding Costa because of the extra weight. Costa's wasn't as explosive. He certainly had the power.
He wasn't moving around as fast as he usually
But it was like one or two shots at a time rather than the kind of flurries that we've expected of him. Vittori was able to kind of walk through them and land some big, big shots. And for me, that was the telling point. Vittori's big shots really kind of shook Costa quite a few times, forced him into the back of the cage. Vittori's head movement, I thought, was really good. The defence from the majority of the head kicks was sound.
Well, he was slipping a lot of shots. A lot of the shots that Costa were throwing at him, he was doing a lot of good to actually slip him. So even though they wasn't connecting at 100%. I won't even say 50%, because he's rolling the shots off like Canelo would when he's boxing. He's rolling the shots off. You're not exactly hitting him flush on the chin. You're making contact, but he's going with your fist. So you're hitting him, but then he's sliding off.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets him back in, it gets you into the distance of him to crack you, and that's exactly what Marvin was doing to Costa. He was just slipping some of them shots and then getting them flurries off, because he knew, if you're going to come in heavier to me and be slow and sloppy, I'm gonna try and counter and just get as many punches off. And that's exactly what he was doing. He was calculated with his shots. He wasn't putting 100% into every single shot. He was setting his shots up. He was feinting his shots. He was setting up his distant shots. He was jabbing at that 40%. He was crossing at like 60%. And then that big right and big left hand at 100% to try and knock him out.
Yeah.
Whereas Costa was just 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%. Can't knock him out. 100%, 100%, 100%. Shit. So, yeah, Marvin... He played the perfect game plan, especially when it came to fighting someone like Paulo Costa.
Especially when you consider how emotional this fight was, for him to stick to a game plan and for him to not go 100%, because no one would have blamed him if he didn't want to absolutely pound Costa's face into the floor. After everything what's gone on in the shit talking and then the missing weight and the sheer disrespect, no one could have been mad at Vittori for wanting to just absolutely decimate Costa, but he knew that Costa was always going to be bigger, he was always going to hit harder, and he had to duck and weave.
He had to be clever about that, because even though you were pissed off, and even though as much as I don't like, that's how much I don't even like him, I don't even need to fucking remember his name. What's he called? Costa. As much as he basically... miss weight and been a prick, you've still got to respect the power that he brings, and Marvin exactly did that. He knew that if he were to go all guns blazing at Costa's going to return back with his own at some point, and it only takes him to crack you once or twice and you're out. And Marvin had that first crack and he were lucky enough to get out of it and have the sense enough to get out of the way of the second one, because that first a couple of times Costa had him hurt, especially with the first crack. He just never got that second crack up.
In that second round, that head kick was brutal. But that second round was also controversial because of the eye poke. Jason Herzog taking no prisoners. He'd already warned Costa quite a few times.
Three times.
Warned him about his outreach eyes. And then Costa, again, showing massive disrespect when he was basically telling Jason Herzog, no, you're not taking a point.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a fine from the commission, because a lot of fighters, if they really talk back to like the judges or the referees after making a decision like that, commissions aren't usually fucking happy. So if they don't give you a fine, it's usually them grilling the UFC to give you a fan.
Yeah, it just seems to me that Costa's team and him have such a bad attitude problem that they want success in the sport but don't want to put
yeah,
in the work.
It.
And they believe that they are above the rules, which they are. Anyway,
they want to be
so,
gifted the shots. They don't want to. They don't want to earn about. He wants to be gifted a title shot against Israel Adesanya without earning it, mm-hmm. and he can't even beat the rank one.
Yeah. So that second round, I think without that eye poke, Costa probably wins it just because of how much he rattled Marvin Vettori. But props to Marvin for having that chin, being able to kind of like take a back step, refresh himself. And there were a lot of times in that that kind of situation, he was pushing Costa away and just avoiding him and getting his breath back and clearing out the cobwebs. But throughout the next two rounds, so going up to the fourth round, it was all Vettori.
Yeah.
Vettori knew that Costa was tired, saw that in his corner, Costa's team were having to essentially shake the blood into Costa's arms. Costa was open-mouthed for the rest of the fight, still landing big shots. I mean, the guy still had so much power, but I think Vettori knew that the gas tank had gone, and he was able to, if he kept up his game plan, picking off the shots, doing a damage via volume rather than via one big shot, that it was going to pick up this fight, and went easily for me into a comfortable points lead to the point where Costa needed a finish. And then, ironically, Costa's best round was the fifth round when he switched up his game plan. For four rounds, he went for head kicks. For four rounds, he went for 1-2 combinations. And in that fifth round, he started focusing on the body and he hurt Marvin Vettori multiple times.
Well, he started focusing on it. Throughout the fight, he was focusing. He was throwing the P kicks, the T kicks, and the side body and the reverse and the roundhouse body kicks to the body. It's just in the fifth round, he knew he needed something.
Focus.
He needed to get them shots off clean, because even though he was hitting Marvin to the body a couple of times, they were only pinging shots. And like I can't remember which one of the commentary team said it, but it's a perfect example. When you're fighting a southpaw, their liver is on this side, is on like the sort of right hand side. So when you're throwing them body kicks, all you're really hitting there is the body, is bone, muscle, different
fat,
sort of organs. Yeah, so you can take a lot to your left hand side, but then when it comes to your right hand side where your liver is, all it takes like two or three shots to maybe put you down. And then that's where in the last round, where Paulo Costa, he played that really well. He kicked him so fucking hard. It was like someone just, it was like baseball when you just hear the perfect connection between bat and ball.
And you didn't even really need to hear it as well. I mean, you could see on Marvin Vettori's face, that stank, that was painful.
And that travelled through from one side straight to the other. And he knew he hurt the liver, Paulo Costa, because he started changing his boxing up there, especially in that last round where he threw like it's somewhat like a uppercut to the right hand side to Marvin Vettori and hit him with that perfect liver shot like Jose Aldo did to Jeremy Stephens to put him down in the fight. He hit him with it in that last round, and you could see it hurt him. Marvin Vettori was slowed down enough as it was coming into the fifth round, because he was goosed from just putting four rounds of absolute living hell onto Paulo Costa and making him deal with everything he was getting thrown at. But in that last round, he definitely slowed down, and Paulo Costa were able to step the game up. Well, it just weren't good enough.
Yeah, and I think Vittori's the end of the round when he went for the takedown but couldn't pull it off, but just was able to force Costa up against the fence, that saved the fight for me.
He needed to do that.
If he had took 30 seconds more of those body shots, I think Costa pulls this win out of the jaws of defeat. But I'm glad Marvin Vettori got that victory. I like watching Paulo Costa. I mean, Bisping said it on the commentary, and Paul Felder kind of agreed with him. All this weight cutting business and all this attitude business side, he's exciting to watch.
Yeah,
he's exciting to watch. But he's got such a bad attitude, and I hope that he learns from this.
Which he won't,
obviously not. But that's pretty much this show wrapped up. Next week we've got another early show, UFC 267, essentially double titles with The bantamweight interim title, Petr Yan versus Corey Sandhagen, which still baffles me, especially when Corey is off a loss. But
just strip Aljamain Sterling for being an absolute nonce and not wanting to fart.
The thoughts of Carlos do not represent the thoughts of us.
Well, you know what I mean. Just tell him to stop being an absolute knobhead, and if you don't want to fight, give it up. And then just, you know exactly what the fight is to make. We're definitely Petr Yan versus TJ Dillashaw. Mm-hmm. That was a fight to make. It's the massive elephant in the room that Dana White and Sean Shelby and apparently everybody else in the UFC are just avoiding. Respect to Corey Sandhagen, I love him as a fighter, but he doesn't deserve to be in he does and he doesn't, but in his last performance he lost, so he doesn't deserve to be in the interim title fight, and it shouldn't be an interim title fight anyway. It should just be fighting for the vacant belt, because Aljamain Sterling should just be stripped.
I do think that Dillashaw turned the fight down.
Did he?
Yeah, I believe
it. Mad bastard, why would he turn it down?
Because I don't think he...
Oh, can he not take steroids anymore?
He's not, I don't think he's... He said he wants at least a couple fights, tune-up fights, before he goes into title contention, so...
So why are we giving it all bigger than fucking beating Corey? Oh, I'll take a fight.
Yeah, because he's TJ Dillashaw, isn't he? He's a snake. But this card is absolutely packed. I mean, we've got Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira. That's going to be a good fight.
I don't think, the one thing about that though, I want Glover to do well, but just because he's been in the UFC for so long, and I've seen
it
a couple
deserves,
of people, yeah,
it deserves the title.
He could have got an easier opponent than Jan Blachowicz. Yeah, come on. Like, the Polish power who just cracked everybody in his way, and then his last performance against Israel Adesanya just goes to show that he can not only absolutely knock your block off, he can take it to the ground if he needs to.
Yeah, and then if those two massive title fights weren't big enough, we've also got Islam Makhachev finally getting a big name fight. Everybody's been ducking him. Dan Okerant ducked him. So that's going to be a banger. And then
Dan Okerant, what, he fought how many weeks ago now?
I think he's had quite a rest this time. I know when he fought Felder, he fought again about 4 weeks later, but I think he's had quite a bit of a layoff this time.
No, I'm sure he only fought a couple of weeks ago, because didn't he not like basically stay in Vegas? Or did he not stay in America or something like that, or wherever they are?
You know, you're right, he fought
sure he did.
Hack Parast.
He won that, and then they basically said to him, yo.
Before that, he lost to Chandler at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and then they were like, hey, do you want to do us a favour, stay here for 14 days and fight?
Well, it's like...
Yeah, can't, I will.
Yeah, it's about a month. But even after that, there's still some fighters who I absolutely think are superb on this card. Magomed Ankalev taking on Volkan Uzdemir.
That's really a good fight.
And then... Hamzat Chimaev's back after his issues with COVID. He's fighting Jiang Liang Li, so that's going to be another bop. Can he move up that welterweight division? So
I think he can.
Yeah,
I think he's one of them spectacle fighters in anywhere between probably middleweight and welterweight. He could probably pick one of them weights. Seriously, pick one of them and dominate it. Mm-hmm. Just for how good he is.
Well, he's still unbeaten, so is he going to go 10-0? But you'll find out next week. So yeah, definitely tune in for that. Anyway, time for the socials. Follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Oh no, it's not even at that anymore. Wow, that needs cutting out. Follow me on Twitter at PodfatherMags. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the show at FiveRoundsPod. Definitely check out the rest of the content on all the amazing networks we're a part of. That's Radio Techers, that's The Chair Shot, and Visionaries Global Media. But yeah, that's all from us this week. So that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Wow, I've heard that for a time.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.